you're down and troubled and you need some love and care and nothing is going right.
From Los Angeles, a big LA welcome to all my listeners out there in Radio Land. I am Dave, the caregiver's caregiver on the Dave Nassany Network, coming to you through the famous worldwide blog talk radio. Yes, folks, I'm the guy who's going to help you guide you through this very difficult journey called caregiving, and we're going to do the best we can to help you avoid all of the obstacles that will keep you from avoiding that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout. Because when you don't put your own mask on first, just like the airlines tell us, in the event of loss of cabin pressure and the oxygen mask falls down from the ceiling, please put your mask on first before you attempt to put the mask on your loved one. And we've heard that a zillion times, right? That's usually when we tune out. But the reason is that you will most likely black out and you won't be of any help to anybody. Now, I know what some of my listeners out there are thinking. What a selfish thing to do. Put my mask on first when my child is right here next to me and they're more important than I am. But folks, believe me, they know what they're talking about. They've seen a few people black out, and I know what I'm talking about, so just trust us on this one. Well, I'm so excited today because we have actually survived our very first world premiere last week show, even though we were plagued with a host of technical difficulties that I'm sure you all thought was very funny, but I was sweating and my blood pressure was elevated. During the first 5 minutes, it was a mess, but fortunately the rest of the show went fantastic. My guest, Lisa DeLong, was with us, and she blessed everybody. Mucho, mucho, much. Is that even a word? Yes, I just invented it. So now, this is our second show of Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver program, and we have another very special guest today for the first hour, author, speaker, and entrepreneur, Sandra Champlain, who is very experienced in the area of surviving grief. And in fact, she is so knowledgeable that I'm having her just focus her discussions on that topic alone, of surviving grief and caregiver burnout, or else we would literally be here all night long. Now, we will attempt to take some callers after the break if you promise to keep your questions to our topic of practical tips for surviving grief and avoiding burnout. The call-in number is 213-943-3630, 213-943-3630, and just push number 1 on your keypad. That tells me you want to talk. For those of you who do not press number 1, on your keypad, that tells me that you are just calling into the show only to listen. Because maybe there's no internet, maybe there's no computer, maybe there's no smartphone near you, or maybe you're just driving down the highway having a good time. All right, enough of that. My guest today, Sandra Champlain, and I met at Craig Duswald's Rockstar Marketing Bootcamp, where we all learned how to write a book in 30 days and self-publish it. But she didn't self-publish her book. She got a major publisher right off the bat. Lucky girl. I wrote 2 books so far, one about my wife, One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships. It's a story about my incredible wife and her amazing journey after she suffered a stroke that left her severely speech impaired and paralyzed on her right side, for those of you who didn't know. And then my second book, Getting Hosed, Secrets, Confessions, and Tales of a Gas Station Owner, about my 35 years in the gas station business. Wow, that's a long time. I can't believe it every time I say it. And all the funny, unbelievable, and crazy things that have ever happened there, and believe me, there are a lot of them, as well as the oil company secrets and all the questions I have been ever asked every time I go to a party. You know, I can't go to a party without someone knowing I own a gas station and asking me like 10 questions. So I says, I'm going to put all these questions in a book. And now I'll just say, read the book. You can get the book at my website on www.davethecaregiverscaregiver.com. That's davethecaregiverscaregiver.com. That's a long address, but I made a short one. www.davenass, N-A-S-S, that's the first part of my last name, .com, davenass.com. I'm now working on my third book. However, this one will not be self-published. A literary agent actually believes that he can pitch this to a major publisher, and so that process takes a lot longer than 30 days, more like a year or two. So please be patient on that one. That's why I started this radio show, to minister to the needs of the caregivers now, especially how to avoid burnout. And now you have a place to tune in every Saturday at 3:30, And you can even listen to the recorded podcasts if you miss them. They're on forever. Just click them, and you'll hear them. Now, my guests. Finally, I get to my guests. Sandra, thank you for being so patient. Her recent book, We Don't Die, A Skeptic's Discovery of Life After Death, talks about her journey to discover proof of life after death. And in that journey, she has learned a thing or two about grief and how to survive it, especially after losing some of her very close family members. Lots of interesting things here in her book, to say the least. Now, I have to tell you, we're both from very different spiritual backgrounds, but we do have a love of each other, and we do share the commonality of loving caregivers and helping them survive grief and overcome burnout. So I'm excited today to merge our two caregiver audiences out there that may also come from very different backgrounds, because they do have one thing in common. They're both grieving, and they need to survive that grief. So, Sandra, now it's your turn finally to talk. Are you there?
I am here.
Oh,
hello,
thank God.
James.
Hello.
No, I've been on the
I'm
edge
sorry
of my
you
seat.
Had to sit through that very, very long introduction. But,
no,
you know,
it's
this
perfect.
Is,
I get to know this, more about you.
Well, thank you. This is only my second show, so there's a lot of people who don't know who I am and what I do and where I come from and why I do it. So, you know, we just had to get all that stuff out of the way. So I wanted to say, first of all, welcome. And
thank
also,
you.
I know you're here to talk about grief and the caregiver burnout experience. Let's start by telling me what in the world is the definition of grief, because everybody's got a different definition. What's your definition?
Oh, sure. And if it's okay, Dave, can I just introduce myself to your audience a little bit, just so they know a little bit about the Sandra behind the...
I am so sorry. That's an excellent idea.
Okay.
You know?
That's all right.
Go ahead. Go right ahead.
One of the things that I know is I listen to a lot of radio shows, and there's something about when we can hear somebody's voice and kind of connect with who they are. And like you said, you know, we might come from some different backgrounds and things, but what we're talking about today, there's, you know, a commonality of being human that we have. We all share that, and we all face loss no matter what. And so a little bit about me. First of all, I have a bit of a cold, so I might have to mute myself and cough. So I'll give you a warning if that happens, or take a drink a glass of water. So pardon me and my sniffles. I live in Massachusetts. I have a day job that's pretty creative. I am a chef, and I cook for race car teams. So I travel and work with my mom, and we set up big lunch buffets around the country, the United States, that is, cooking for race teams. I also own a coffee and chocolate store that's almost 25 years old that's in Connecticut. I have a manager who works that. It's a very small kind of mom-and-pop operation. But that's a little bit of my history, and the whole purpose for the book, I think the whole purpose for our interview right now is the truth is, in a nutshell, that I had been someone who really studied the grieving process after the death of my dad. You know, we're talking about grief as it relates to caregivers right now, and I think, and we'll get into the definition in just a second, but anytime we experience a severe loss, I mean, grief can kick in our minds and bodies. And for me, my dad passed away just 4 years ago, this past Sunday, as a matter of fact. And grief can kick in before someone dies. Like I said, any significant loss. So just knowing that Dad was diagnosed with cancer and his future was uncertain caused grief within my family. My siblings and I started having some major arguments and disagreements about Dad's care, and we were really once a normal, loving family. And so, you know, you hear these stories of family members that start fighting before someone passes away and then after, and we turned into one of those families, which was not predictable. And then also when Dad did pass away, I hit an all-time low as a human being as far as depression and sadness, and I just couldn't pull myself out. And, you know, at some point, it was like, you know, I see the cartoon characters with the light bulb. You know, my mind went to, I wonder if all of this is a part of grief. And so I took the time and just wanted to study the grieving process. Not only why did I feel as lousy as I did, and anyone who's had a loss or major change in their life knows just how awful you can feel, but also like what would cause relationships to suffer so badly. And so I found out some things that aren't widely known about grief, and more importantly, like how our brain operates during the grieving process. And I found some things out that helped me lessen my pain. I don't know if I can say it helped me move through it quicker, because every human being is different. But ultimately, everything that I learned, I decided to give away to people. And I created an audio called How to Survive Grief. And I bought the domain name, which still survives, called survivegrief.com. And I posted this 70-minute audio that people could download, or they could just press play. It's free, like I said, no strings attached. And within a matter of 3 months after my dad died, over 3,000 people in 15 countries had heard it. And what's important about this is, yeah, I had only made about 5 posts on Facebook. And my friends told 2 friends, and they told 2 friends. And while that in and of itself is wonderful, what I wasn't expecting was the reaction. People started emailing me about using some of the tools that I give, helping them ease the pain, and also use the tools as far as how to communicate with our loved ones. And then finally, Dave, people started emailing me, and also someone looked me right in the eyes and told me after listening to my audio how it prevented him from committing suicide. And
wow.
It was so major that, you know, truthfully, that's why I'm on the quest to share. I know my book is titled We Don't Die, but the secret beyond the book is that, like you had said in the beginning, we come from different spiritual backgrounds. My title is very controversial, and part of me was thinking not many people know they're grieving, not many people are going to buy a grief book, so what would be a book that people would pick up and just have to know what is inside? And I titled it what I did, and chapter 10 in my book is what that grief audio is. So like it or not, I do believe that every human being is going to deal with grief, and we never learned it in school. And if I can give people some kind of cornerstones to help them through, I think that would really help someone in their life. So I know that's a long introduction, but I just felt it was necessary.
Well, you know, you're absolutely right. I never even knew what the grief process was until my wife had a stroke, and I was in it. I am surrounded by grieving people. Just about 4 months ago, my cousin dropped dead of an aneurysm in his heart. My uncle died last month, and just this week, a very good friend's mother just died. So we are surrounded by grieving people. So actually, I didn't know that you were in the coffee business. I'm in the coffee business, too. I have an espresso bar inside our gas station, so we make all sorts of drinks. Much better than that big company that starts with an S and ends with a S.
Yes, I know that company.
I won't mention them because I don't want to get sued.
No, it's okay. But you know what's funny, talking about everything here, is you just had your premiere last week on your show. And so now this is second time, right?
Yes.
And I think you would agree, and you might be able to expand upon this, because we can tie this right in with grief. When you don't know something, it can seem like a whole new world, and it can seem insurmountable. But then once you start getting some of the distinctions around it, like what it takes to have a radio show, or even somebody who's learning how to ride a bicycle for the first time, without knowing there's a thing called balance, you know, we fall off, and we may not want to get back on. However, after a couple goes of it, whether it's the radio show, whether it's being on a bicycle, whether you're listening to this show and you've had a loss and you're a caregiver or you're experiencing grief or all of the above, once you shed the light on the subject and you're not the first one who's been there and you've heard from people that have been there before, I think it makes the journey a little bit easier and you feel a little bit more human. You're in a place of love and acceptance. You're not alone. And anything's possible, right?
What a great outlook. That's certainly a way of turning lemons into lemonade, which is my philosophy in life.
Absolutely.
So the definition of grief, do you have that
handy?
Well,
the real definition, the definition that's in the dictionary is deep, prolonged mental anguish, intense sorrow, emotional suffering caused by a loss, a disaster, or a misfortune, especially by the death of a loved one. That is the definition. Now, if I can share what I think it truly is, because anything put in the dictionary version, I think, lacks the human element of emotion. Can I read to you my definition
Absolutely.
Of grief? And everybody has their own version of this. An assortment of terrible feelings that last a long, long time, including shock, disbelief, anger, rage, fear, sadness, sickness, uncontrollable crying to the point of being buckled over in pain with no relief in sight, having a feeling of emptiness that life will never be the same again, not being able to concentrate, having other areas of life suffer, including massive miscommunications and relationships with spouses, siblings, friends, and coworkers. Life feels like it's falling apart. To me, that is a more accurate version of grief. And what I don't mention in this is it really is any time there is a severe loss. And so, yes, we're talking about there can be grief from a physical death when we lose someone. There's grief called anticipatory grief, like my dad was diagnosed with cancer and we knew the end was coming at some point. Grief kicked in then when a loved one or yourself physically becomes impaired or our health changes significantly. Grief can kick in for both parties involved, the caregiver and the person who's got whatever is happening. Things like losing a job, losing your income, a divorce, or any breakup of any kind of a relationship. If we have, they call it empty nest syndrome. A lot of people think, oh, no big deal. Well, no, if a mother or parents lose a child that's been in the home for however many years, 16, 18 years, they go off to college, there is a loss, there is a missing. And I call all of this, as do many people, grief.
Absolutely. There's all types of grief, all types of loss. I've seen it so many times. We went to a support group when Charlene had her stroke, and it was a special support group for stroke survivors. It was young stroke survivors because she was relatively young. She was only 52. And most of the stroke support groups are old people, 80s, 90s. Mm-hmm. And, they just have a lot of different issues than someone who's young. And I remember meeting some of the most heart-raking stories. A young mother of 23 had a brainstem stroke. She had three small children. I mean, how do you deal with that?
Right.
If you're married to her, how does your husband deal with that?
Yeah. And it's unfortunate because a lot of times relationships, especially that don't understand they're in the grieving process, can actually break up. Parents that lose a child, for instance, 80% of those relationships end in divorce. If one of the two in a marriage is diagnosed with a life-threatening illness like cancer, there's a 90% chance that that relationship will end in divorce. And so it's really a double whammy. You're not only grieving over the original loss, but then if you lose that relationship with your loved one, you're grieving again. And part of my big intention on, so I don't want to call it breaking the code of grief, but getting it out as a mainstream conversation is, when we can understand what's really happening in our brain, when we can understand that we are prone to feel guilty, that we're prone to be angry, that we're prone to either want to remove ourselves from all people and keep quiet, or just the opposite, tell your story to every single person who will listen. When you start realizing that what are the, it's more than just stages of grief. There's so many different elements to grief. And wherever you are and whatever you're going through, if you can understand it, you can have compassion for yourself. You can have compassion for it when it shows up in your loved one, so that families, siblings, spouses, friends can work through whatever the loss is together and stay strong, and perhaps even have the relationship be stronger as opposed to coming apart. Because it is absolutely devastating to have any kind of loss. And then when you have one, another one on top of it, say a divorce, or, you know, you lose your spouse, I mean, it's awful. So yeah. We're here to break the code and help and make a difference and have some, all of us get some more understanding.
Yeah, and when you're a caregiver, it's maybe even a triple whammy, because here you're dealing with, let's say your spouse, you know, has a debilitating stroke, for example, and she loses her speech, she's paralyzed on her right side. Your life just changed instantly, forever. And even though the stroke didn't happen to you, it did. Because
of course it
she's
did.
She's half of you. You know, we're one together. And it's very interesting that a caregiver, because I didn't think this was happening to me, but a caregiver is actually going through the grieving process along with the person who had the stroke. Because not only are we dealing with the loss of a loved one, I mean, in many ways, it's like she died, you know. And
sure.
The original Charlene did die. She's not around anymore. This new person is here now.
Right.
And in addition to that, you know, we've lost some freedoms. There's things that I can't do anymore. And my life has changed. I remember in the stroke support groups, there were more than there should have been people who were there alone because their spouse decided that they did not sign up for this. That while
yeah.
they were still in the hospital, they were gone. Divorce papers, just checked out, and so on. I mean, even I remember reading in the papers, Newt Gingrich, you know, while his wife was battling cancer, filed her with divorce papers. So, I mean, it happens.
And it's more than a triple whammy. I think it's probably a quadruple whammy because, no, seriously, let's look at it like this. If you, say, we'll use my dad as an example. Okay, so he died. Okay. There is the grief of losing him, and I say, and this is my own personal feelings, that the more we love, the more painful it will be. Mm. Because, I mean, when you think about it, if you read about somebody on the news or is on the news that died, it might bother you a little bit, but once it hits home, especially someone very close to you, it hurts even more. So dad passed away. So, yes, there's the grief, the normal grief of losing my dad. And even though it's expected that a parent goes first, I mean, tremendously painful, but dad's gone, he's gone. I mean, that's the way it is. He's physically gone, period. So there's grief, and eventually one would think that it gets better in time. Okay, fine. Now, if you have a loved one that, say, has a stroke, well, you're absolutely correct. Not only are they grieving because they are now living in a body that's not the same as it was. And for the spouse or the caregiver, not always, as you know, husband, wife, my cousin actually was a caregiver for my uncle, who became a quadriplegic for 14 years before he passed, and she was the sole caregiver. Yes, you're grieving. Yes, your life's not going to be the same. However, it's not like, and correct me if I'm wrong, but many caregivers don't get the sleep they need. They don't get the personal time that they need. And so that all wears down on our system. So I think caregivers need special love, special kindness, special tools. And I don't know the whole world. I was only caregiver for my dad for 5 months before he passed. But I think, you know, it's not that any grieving instance is simple, but when someone dies, okay, they're gone and tremendously painful. But like you said, people are still alive and your whole life is different. And so I think there really needs to be extra TLC and extra compassion for caregivers. So we're in the right place right now.
And I learned a very important lesson when a friend of mine lost her husband. Actually, they weren't even married yet. They were engaged to be married. It was her fiancé. And he died suddenly. And this has got to be like 3 years ago now. And she's still grieving. You know, she still has the picture of the two of them together on her social media page. And I made the mistake last year of saying, you know, it's been a couple of years. You know, you need to move on. And she lashed out at me like a pit bull.
Oh, of course.
You know, everyone grieves differently, you know, and what right do you have to say how long I'm supposed to grieve? And you know, I learned a very important lesson. Everyone grieves in their own way, and obviously I should know this, but my cousin's wife, it's been 4 months now since she lost, and they're young, you know, in the prime of life. And I asked her how she was doing. You know, she's been going to a grieving support group. And because originally she says, you know, she just cries every single day. And so 4 months later I says, you know, are you still crying every day? And she says, yes. You know, so it's tough. It's tough. And now I look at my other friend whose mother just suddenly died with liver disease. And they haven't even had the funeral yet. And I just see, you know, the journey that she's about to embark on. Because, you know, a lot of times we have unresolved issues with our parents, you know.
Yes.
We mean to apologize. We mean to sit down and have that, you know, five-hour talk with them to discuss,
right,
you know, all the things. And when it never happens, just so much churns on the inside. And it may take months or years to find out why you can't sleep, why you can't eat, why you're always depressed, why, you know, it's heartbreaking.
It is. And if we might get into just some of the things happening in the brain during grief, I think that will help a lot, because there are people, and, you know, 3 or 4 years can be a regular amount of time with the death of a loved one. And even at that, you never stop missing them. And there are moments when either you smell someone with their cologne, or you hear a song that was a special song, or just something moves you that you can break out in tears at any time. I mean, it's a very real thing. So there's no set time for grief. However, one of my passions about sharing about grief is that, you know, we hear stories of someone who 30 years later is still grieving. And what I want to tell people is what's normal in grief and how our brain has a habit of making new habits. So just like we all have or should have the habit of brushing our teeth, and the more times we brush our teeth, the more times we want to brush our teeth. And I don't know if anybody else is like this, but I can't go to bed at night having dirty teeth. That's like, I got to get up and brush my teeth. Well, there's things about grief. There's some things we'll get into in a little while about what happens in the brain during grief. But things like being angry or feeling guilt, like you should have said something or you should have done something. You know, case in point, my grandmother had passed away about 6 years ago. And the day she passed away, I was traveling. And I had this thought, like, I should call Grammy. Well, I didn't call Grammy. I got busy, and I said, I'll call her tomorrow. Well, Dave, there was no more tomorrows. I found out that she died that night. And for months and months and months and months. I just kept stewing on, shame on me, I could have called her, I could have called her, I could have called her. Now, that's guilt. And part of, I mean, it is normal to feel guilty when, for various reasons, when there's any kind of loss. But the thing I want to get into about habit forming is the more times we feel guilty, there's a new habit now being created in our brain to feel guilty once again. So when your mind's at rest, what will normally come up is one of its habits. Well, let's feel guilty right now. And so
really?
This is what happens. This is what happens with people that are grieving 30, 31 years, 50 years, is it's really not their fault. They don't know about the grieving process. They don't know what's normal. The more times you think a certain thought, the more times it'll naturally come up. And part of my thing is when we can acknowledge these are the different things involved with grief, and anger is a big one, and guilt, I'm just bringing up these two. If you feel yourself with a bout of anger, a bout of grief, you know, they say what you resist persists. So if you just try to simply push it away, it's going to creep back in there. But if you can take the time, like for my grandma's death, and feel the guilt, and you know what, at that moment, I made the best decision I knew to make. And yes, I was busy doing something else. Forgive myself and kind of short circuit the guilt. Feel it, let it go. I'm an adult. I made the best decision I could, and let go. Same thing with anger. Either you can be angry and say, "Oh my gosh, anger is part of the grieving process. I feel lousy, and I feel really angry." You know, if you need to punch a pillow, do so. However, not take it out on a loved one. Realize, like, "Oh, this is anger. This is part of it." And yes, so and so is in front of me, and I might not be happy with their last judgment about something, but I'm not going to take it out on them. You know, and even having a moment of, and this is like, again, short-circuiting so it doesn't become a new pattern in the brain, but take a few moments and take a few deep breaths. Try to pull yourself in the present moment. Really pay attention to your surroundings. Try just to let your brain get quiet. You know, whatever you're looking at right now, pay attention to it in detail, or touching, or music might be on. And it just kind of rewires the neural pattern so that you're not trapped in grief for a number of years.
Yes, absolutely. You know, in my book, One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships, there's a whole chapter on guilt. And I have a great analogy about guilt. See, guilt is like a disposable diaper. Or actually, your conscience should be thought of as a disposable diaper. The guilt is the poop in the diaper, in the analogy. Now, see, a diaper is designed for one purpose, and one purpose only, is to catch the poop from a baby. The diaper, or your conscience, is either free or full of poop, or guilt.
Correct.
There are two types of guilt, undeserved guilt and deserved guilt. So when you feel guilty, when your diaper is full of poop, the first thing you need to do is ask yourself, is there a legitimate, and that word is in quotes, a legitimate reason that I should feel this guilt? If the answer is yes, then fine. Correct the wrong, apologize to the person, fix what you broke, call who you should have called, turn yourself into the police, whatever it is, fix it. Then take that diaper, your conscience, that caught the guilt, the poop, and dispose of it, never again to see it. Guilt will periodically come to every conscience, just like poop will periodically come to every diaper. It's just a fact of life.
It is, and it paints a visual.
Now, let me give you the other side. Sorry for that visual. If the answer to the above question is that your guilt is undeserved, then first make sure that you can be honest about that and objective about your answer. You know, if you're not sure, then ask the opinion of a well-respected mentor. If the answer is still that it's undeserved, then there is no wrong to correct. You're innocent. The guilt is undeserved. No apology is necessary. There's nothing to fix. There's nothing broken. There's no one to call. Okay, you get the picture. Then take that same diaper, your conscience, holding that same poop, that undeserved guilt, and dispose of it. You never have to see it again. In either case, the guilt or the poop is gone and your conscience or the diaper is clear. That's why they call it a disposable diaper, because once it's full of poop, it's useless. Now, you know what happens if you leave a dirty diaper on a little baby's bottom, right? You're a mother.
Oh, not so good. I'm not a mother, but...
Well, one day you will be a mother.
I know I've changed some diapers.
I have three daughters. I have three daughters, and believe me, it just cooks their bottom, and they get what's called a diaper rash. And I think there's nothing more painful in the world than a diaper rash. And likewise, unresolved guilt can really damage a person. I know people who've had guilt issues for years or a lifetime, undeserved guilt. And you know who is who's the worst at this is Jewish kids who have Jewish moms. And Jewish kids usually do have Jewish moms. But they wrote the book on dispensing guilt, I think. So that's my funny story about guilt.
And what is good. And can I just want to explain, if I can, the physiological thing that's happening to our body when we're grieving. Because they're... You know, long ago, and in different countries, there was this practice: is if people were grieving, they wore black or they wore a band around their arm for 6 months to a year to let people know, "Hey, have compassion. This person's grieving." And in these days, people are lucky if they get a few days off from work. I mean, it's not. We don't know enough about grief. We're not talking about it enough. I think we fall into this trap that we think we're these big people. We should be over it by now. There's something I can do to turn it off or to get through it. I mean, I think that's a misconception. We're in, what I want to explain is when we grieve and we have a significant loss, our brain runs on these things called neurotransmitters. We've heard things like when you laugh, endorphins get released, and you know, things like when we eat too much turkey on Thanksgiving, we get tryptophan gets released, and we get relaxed, and we get sleepy. I mean, there's all these things that happen within our body and our brain, and when we love someone, and I'm going to use the example of loving someone, so for a caregiver or for someone that experiences the loss of a loved one. When we love someone, we call it love. We experience love. I think love is the most beautiful thing we have. However, what's happening in our brain is there's actually like a connection that is built, and science has proved this. I'd use this relationship of grieving or this relationship of love similar but yet different. If we are addicted to a substance, say it's an alcohol or chemical dependency, we can all picture someone that is addicted to something. And if you take away that substance, you know, the body goes into shock, the brain goes into shock, our mind is not 100%. There's a lot of physical pains that go along with it, a lot of suffering. Now, when we love someone and we have that connection and that connection is broken, or in the case of caregivers, a life has changed or there's an illness that has taken over, our brains go through almost a withdrawal period. I hate to use the comparison between the addicts, but I think just to paint a visual, kind of like you did with the diapers. And this is all for having compassion, because if you think of someone who's been pulled from their addiction, whatever that thing is, hopefully you would treat them with kindness. If you have an argument or a conversation, you would have a little compassion going, well, they're not 100% in their head right now because they're going through this. Well, when we experience grief, similarly, our brain has to reformat itself to the new surroundings. It really, it's like a survival mechanism. We need to get used to our new surroundings, which takes time. There's time that these, you know, serotonin and the other neurotransmitters need to build back up for our brain to function clearly. But there are some side effects, kind of like the addict is now can't sleep at night or has got the shakes or whatever those things are. In a grieving mind, there are things like the anger, the sadness, the deep, dark depression, the feelings of guilt. There are things like it is common for anyone who's had a loss, a grieving or anticipatory grief or a caregiver, that our memory just doesn't seem to be what it was before. Can't remember where we put our keys. My mom had a conversation with a good friend of hers who's going through a divorce right now. And the woman had called my mom a few nights ago and told her the saga, what the latest is with the divorce. Well, she called back the next day, and she proceeded to tell my mom the whole story again. And my mom said, "You just told me that yesterday." Mm-hmm. Well, this woman has no memory at all of even having that conversation. So this is very real. Our memory, our perception, meaning our view of the occurring world. For instance, if you get a caregiver with their loved one, and they're both experiencing grief, they could be having a conversation about paying the bills or whatever that may be. Mm-hmm. And each person is going to walk away from that conversation and could possibly have two different stories of what just happened. A grieving brain may not store actual things that happen the same way as they really did. It's bad enough with a healthy mind. I mean, how many times have we heard if two people witness a car accident, they both have different versions of the story? Well, two grieving brains, it's even worse. And why this is important to get out is there's often a lot of arguments. There's like you had said, marriages that end in divorce, people walking away from their loved one, the siblings that fight after a parent dies and never to talk again. We're having conversations, having communications with grieving brains that aren't storing information correctly, fighting about things that didn't even happen or didn't happen sure. really the way we thought. And so, again, you're going to hear me a lot of times, the common denominator is have compassion when we can understand the grieving process and know that we might be in one of the stages right now. Let's have some compassion for ourselves and the other person. Let's not make it worse and, really blow things out of shape. And yes, there are things we can do to get our brains a little healthier, but it takes a while. And while we're in it, you know, like I said, compassion.
Well, as you know, depression is one of the stages of the grief process, and depression almost always is a result, or I should say suicide is almost always a result of depression. So when do we know when we are depressed enough to seek medical help, or that we're grieving too much or too long and we should consult a physician?
I just had a little cough, so I'm on the edge. I might need you to talk for a little bit. I think I'm okay.
You can cough anytime you want here.
Well, I have a mute button, and I have a glass of water right next to me. The truth is, it's never too soon to talk to someone, ever. And if there's ever a question is this grief normal? I'm really feeling hurt. No question, reach out. There are grief support groups. There's obviously caregiver support groups. There's even being part of your show, Dave. When we're grieving, and I know myself as a caregiver, the 5 months I was with Dad, either I was with Dad or I was alone. I wanted to keep myself kind of separate from other people. It's a very alone kind of a process, I felt. And I don't know where anybody else is, but to have a community, to be able to listen to a show, like right now, just and to replay it, to just know that, okay, I'm not alone, to hear a friendly voice or two. I created that audio, How to Survive Grief, and it still exists. Sun Survive told me that every time they hear it, it's like they hear something that they haven't heard before. Well, that goes back to the memory, and that goes back to our brains can be stewing about one thing and not really being able to listen. But it is never too soon to be involved, and I think it's essential, as much as we want to pull ourselves back and be alone, I think it is essential that we are with others, getting involved with your faith, getting involved in a support group, even having a friend that you can talk to. And again, we might want to pull ourselves away, but to not be alone. You brought up suicide, and there's over 1 million worldwide grief-related suicides. And those folks that either emailed me or told the one man who told me in person that my words convinced him not to end his life. And I hadn't intended on that being a byproduct of it, but what it was people could understand grief. And in fact, this gentleman said to me three times, he said, it was like you knew what was happening in my brain. You knew the thoughts I was having. And he says, when I realized that if you could know all those things about me in this audio, this obviously what I'm experiencing is grief. So it just kind of shed the light that it's not your fault. I did not contemplate suicide myself, but Dave, I was in such a deep state of depression that I could understand why others would choose that route, because it's awful. And anytime, and I didn't know there was help available, nor did I really go out looking for it until finally I did, because I realized that the Sandra that's been on this planet all these years is not even close to this depressed, angry monster that now surfaced. I thought there really must be something wrong with me. But to get that this is just part of the grieving process, and all of our brains are different. I mean, if we're measuring these healthy brain chemicals and at any given time we have 100%, say, and then we go through a period of grief and it may drop to 20% or 10%, I mean, there are brains that get down to 2% healthy brain level, and that's critical to get some help, to even to be paying attention to the people in our life and knowing that, oh, this guy's really retreating right now, and I know that he just had a loss, or you know, someone in his family is, and to reach out and make a difference and to help people get educated and not let them be alone.
Wow. Well, in your book you talk about some of the physical and mental symptoms of grief. Well, you want to touch on some of that? You did already touch on some of them, but...
But I can get into some more because, yeah, it helps to understand. Like I said, you know, when Dad first died, I first retreated. I didn't want to be around anybody. But then I just wanted to tell my story over and over and over and over and over and over and over. And it was like, what is that? So that's an impact. Our sleep cycle can be off. Sometimes you find yourself in that you can't fall asleep at all. And then other times, all you can do is sleep. So these neurotransmitters and serotonin in particular control our sleep cycle, so not enough of it, and it's out of whack. Concentration and your attention span might drop along with your memory, so that even kids that are grieving, it's very normal that their grades go down. People at work, they might not perform to 100% because we just can't. Our brain doesn't have the capability to do that. Our physical energy can drop. We don't. If you're somebody who's prone to going for a walk every day, man, you might feel like just staying inside. If you're prone to eating healthy, you just might be craving junk food and just want to comfort yourself. So you'll have a physical reaction to this. Your emotions can be really out of whack. I remember, you know, I use my dad's death because it's the most recent thing, but I went through this almost, they call it shock, but I was at his funeral and didn't shed one tear. It was just like I was completely numb. But then there were times that, like I said, I cook for the race car teams. I remember cooking a big vat of scrambled eggs, and I buckled over in tears, and I couldn't even breathe. I was so out of control, sad. And then there's the anger that kicks in. I mean, there's so many different things. Things that we find that we were normally interested in, you may not be interested while you're grieving. You know, every human being is different, and I'm sure there's plenty of things that I haven't even gotten into. There are some things, and you spoke a minute ago about when to know how to get some help. There are moments that your grief might be so intense that you start having feelings that, you know, you really are all alone in this and that you're a failure, maybe that you're a burden to your friends and family. Your kids might be better off if somebody else raised them. These are warning signs of severely low neurotransmitters, and, you know, get some help ASAP. Your family would be better off without you. You think you're going crazy. You'd be better off dead. You know, those kind of thoughts. I mean, it's, and unfortunately, it's very real to a lot of people. And if you don't, or your loved one doesn't know, it's a part of grief. It's many people have taken action. And like I said, you know, it causes even more grief to have anything like that happen.
You know, Sandra, you brought up a good point about children grieving. How do children grieve differently than adults?
I don't know the whole world of children grieving. I wish I did.
But I don't know if
I'm the best to answer it. Oh, no question they grieve. Because, you know, when we're older, many of us have our faith established in our beliefs, and we have a little bit more understanding of pain and loss, even if we don't know the whole world of grief. But for a child, I mean, it's just pulling the rug right out from underneath them. And you know, we have that bond with our parents, who are usually our anchors, and then, God forbid, it's a parent that you lose. There's no understanding. There are, and you'd have to do a little research on it, there's some special support for kids that are grieving, and there's some special books and things, too, that kids can read and the parents can read as well to help with the grieving process. But it is, gosh, just as painful. Our little ones, even ourselves as little ones, you know, we are loving creatures, and take away someone or something that we love, even if we lose an animal. It's intense grief. It's an intense loss and intense pain.
Yeah. Well, let's finish up on grief, and then we can start talking about caregiver burnout. I think it's generally agreed that there's 5 stages of grief, and they're generally in this order, but not necessarily. And the first is denial.
Right.
You know, this can't be happening to me. What's going on? You know, and then you move on to anger. You realize this is happening to me, and you're angry at somebody. And in many cases, that anger needs an object to be directed to. And most of the times, it's the loved one. Most of the times, it's the caregiver who is the object of all that anger. And you can comment on some of this when I go over all 5 of them.
Sure.
Then bargaining, you know. Okay, there must be a way out of this. You know, either bargaining with the situation or bargaining with God, just believing that there's a way out, you know.
Right.
Then we realize there is no way out. Then we move to the next step, which is depression. This is very depressing. What am I going to do? Life is not worth living. What's going on? My life is turned upside down. And then some talk about a stage of loneliness. Some talk about a stage of shock. There are others, but basically, you know, they're all subcategories, I think, of the 5. But the goal, of course, is to reach acceptance. So, any tips to get to that acceptance really fast?
As painful as this is to say, the only way to the other side of grief is to go through it. It is to experience the emotions. It's to be on the roller coaster. It's to go through the stages. And unfortunately, for some, you know, stages aren't done necessarily in that order. And like you said, there's often a lot of sub stages within the stages. So wherever you are in that is normal. There are things that we can do. See, if we take it on just the belief we don't know what grief is and here are the stages and then someday we'll get through it. Yes, someday hopefully you will. Unfortunately, like I said, our brain can pick up new patterns of thinking and feeling, and the more times we feel a certain way, the more times it'll automatically come up. But I like to give people some tips to care for themselves, and not only in a way that will make you feel less pain and a little better, but it can actually help on the like neurotransmitter level, help bring up your good feelings and let some of that those healthy brain chemicals start to flow again. And in turn, that does relieve a lot of the pain. People say, you know, that helps them get through the grief faster. You know, there's a woman that I had who had emailed me, and she had listened to my audio, and she said that, this is the Survive Grief audio, she said she's been to support groups, she just reads everything she can on grief. I mean, she's done everything after the loss of her husband, and she says for 3 years, she says she just couldn't pull herself out. And she says, then I listened to your How to Survive Grief, and she says, I understand and I'm free. And, you know, I don't take those words lightly, and I think that's one of the reasons, Dave, I do so many radio shows, and I do try to talk about it, is because it's bad enough when either our loved one dies or our loved one or ourselves, our health changes. I mean, that's tough enough. But when we're trapped in grief, it's almost like a part of us dies inside, and we can't see the light. We can't see. It's hard to be grateful for things. It's hard to live our life when we're trapped there. And so while grief is normal, I think to help people get to the other side of it, everything, and I know you're going to agree with this, but as tough as things have been with your wife's health, it's had to happen the way it has for you now to have this show, for you to have the book, your upcoming book, for you to want to make a difference. And I don't know the big picture of life and why things happen the way they do, and I do know there is a tremendous amount of suffering in the world. However, we could either be a victim and be like locked in our grief for 30, 50 years, or with some understanding of how grief works, using some of the tools to help ease the pain and move through it, and then to look at our life like, to be honest with you, the most painful thing that's ever happened to me in my life is my dad's death, you know, for so many different reasons. Even, you know, the arguments that I've had with my siblings and just my all-time low and everything. But out of it came the grief audio, came the book, came, and then truthfully, like I said, you know, my main thrust behind the book is to get people living great lives and being free from grief and understanding and all that. And none of that could have happened if Dad hadn't passed the way he did and I didn't go through grief. So whether this is true or not, if we can use our present to empower us that maybe there's a person to help that's got something similar going on, or maybe there's a way to learn from it. You know, I know the woman who created Mothers Against Drunk Driving, it all came out of her grief. There's a young woman, well, she's young to me, whose daughter had died, and instead of being a victim of her death, she's now helping other young women who are facing the same troubles, and she was just written up in a very big magazine. And this is something about, you know, making a difference, using our pain in order to help someone else. So I know I got sidetracked.
Not a problem. I had to mute myself so I could cough.
Oh, that's what we do. But anyways, if it's okay, maybe you want to get a word in about some tools for caring for yourself and to boost the serotonin level in our brain.
That's where we're going to move on to next, caring for yourself. And, you know, it's really not shifting gears, because whether you are grieving or you are a caregiver, you both need to care for yourself, because, you know, a caregiver is a very special person. And I'm not saying that just because I'm a caregiver, but I've looked around, and they are, I mean, I certainly, I'm not worthy. I don't qualify to be, you know, an official caregiver, even though I know I am, because they're self-sacrificing people.
Definitely.
And, I mean, a lot more self-sacrificing than I am. And that's only because I've learned to be a little more selfish in order to survive, you know, because the title of my next book, which is, you know, The Caregiver's Caregiver, I wanted to change the title to The Selfish Caregiver. But that has such negative tones to it.
Right.
That a lot of people say, you can't do that, you know. But really, to be a good caregiver, you have to be just a little more selfish so that you can survive to be around, you know. But
yeah, and it's not real selfishness. I mean, it's crucial for survival.
Yes.
Really.
And it's just that it goes against every grain in their body, every fiber in their body, is that they are self-sacrificial. They will give you the shirt off their back. We both know people like this who literally have nothing because they're always giving it away. They're like a conduit. You give
right.
it to them. I can't tell you how many people I've given things to, and I'll see them next week. I say, where's that thing I gave you? Oh, I gave it to somebody. and by doing that, they're just setting themselves up for burnout, you know.
Right.
Now, there's a caller on the line. I'm not sure if they want to speak, but if they do, all they have to do is push the number one, and that'll tell me that you want to speak. Otherwise, feel free to just continue to listen. But I would like you to speak on this next half of the program about caregivers and what they can do for themselves. I can just tell you what I do before you go into answering
okay.
my question. And it was very uncomfortable for me to do this at first because, you know, my wife is a wonderful, amazing person, but, you know, she lost her speech and she lost the right side of her body. So she has become, as every stroke survivor has become, self-centered. And she's not normally self-centered, but you can take the most selfless person who has a disability, and all of a sudden they become self-centered. It's all about me and my needs, and, you know, what about me? And so I have discovered that I had to get away to have breaks, and especially during the first 2 years, because this was when she was grieving and she was going through the grief process and she was stuck in anger for a long
mm-hmm.
time, you know. And in fact, because she can't speak and verbalize, now just imagine this, you know, our speech, our language is the only thing that separates us from the rest of the animal world. You know, God has given us language, but that
right.
part of her brain was damaged. And no language will work, not even sign language, because that's a language. And so there were times that the only thing she could do was just scream in frustration, because she knew what she wanted to say. It was on the tip of her tongue, but her brain couldn't figure out how to say it. And she knew what she wanted to write, but her brain couldn't figure out how to write it. And you can only imagine the frustration that for what seemed like weeks, she was just screaming and crying, and long enough just to take the next breath to continue screaming and crying.
Oh,
and, you know,
no.
I needed, as much as I loved her, I needed a break. So I would plan these weekends away, out of state, to my relatives so that I could just, you know, unwind and just be around normal people for a change. And you know what? I had her mother watch her. And you may not be able to find someone who can be as good a caregiver as you, you know, and that's okay, because no one's going to be as good as you. You're the best. But you only need to find someone who can provide adequate care, because you know what? They'll miss you when you get back. You'll be treated a lot better. You'll be appreciated more. But if it wasn't for taking those little mini vacations away from my lovely wife, I don't think I'd be here today talking about it. I might be dead, or I might be in a mental ward, you know, suffering from insanity. So
I just got a picture in my mind of a cell phone. And you know how my cell phone says 100% battery, and then it goes down 83%, 62%, and then, you know, finally when it's down low enough, it turns red. And and then
Danger, it, Will Robinson. If
yeah,
you remember
and of
with
course,
that.
If you're looking at your phone and you have very little battery left, oh, you're starting to worry and things. And then at some point, it goes from red to just off. And I think what you're talking about, going away on your weekend or your retreat or even to have some quiet time yourself, what happens is you know, when you plug in the cell phone and all of a sudden, oh, charging, 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 and then you see it getting stronger and stronger, and then, okay, back to 50%, back to 62%, back to 75%, and then finally up to 100. It's not a matter of being selfish. It is as necessary as plugging in your cell phone if you want to use it. You need to plug yourself in or turn yourself off, however you want to look at it, and enable to for you to continue. So I think that it is critical. I mean, it really is. And, you know, if we're looking at it from a brain level, you know, with a depleted amount of these neurotransmitters, we can't function. Just like, you know, our car needs oil, our car needs gasoline. You take those things away, you're not going to have a functioning car. So to put the car in the shop, put in all the windshield wiper fluids and the oil and all the, you know, steering wheel fluid and brake fluid, I mean, that's what we're talking about. Your retreat is one thing. Anytime that we can do something that can make us feel good or feel better, not only does it make us feel good mentally, but it actually shifts gears for our brain that we go into. Instead of, you know, chemical removing zone, we're actually adding our chemicals in. So things like, you know, a friend of mine, the day before my dad passed away, my siblings were with him, and we were fighting, and they wanted me out of the room, and not a pretty picture. But my friend took me to a puppy store. And it was a really quaint mom-and-pop store, not, you know, one of these tough things you see in the malls. But you could play with the puppies. You could lift them out of their cages and, you know, all very well supervised. But I had all these little critters licking my face, and it was the sweetest thing. And there's no way I could not be present with the puppies and the puppy love, even though I had this other terrible thing going on. And so even for just those few minutes, it provided something in my system that I actually felt better. And not that everybody has to do that, but there might be some music you enjoy listening to. You might be somebody who likes to journal or write or create art, or, you know, if you can even, you know, often you're not going to want to do this because it's easier to either be in the caregiving mode and not taking time for yourself. But if you just have a habit of keeping a journal with you, or a lot of us on our cell phones have the memo that we can type things in, if you spend 5 minutes looking around and just thinking, what are you grateful for? And take something, because, you know, right off the bat, you might not be grateful for anything. But if you start thinking, you know what, I do have a roof over my head. Some people don't. It's a sunshiny day. Wow, I'm grateful for that. You know, and you start, anytime you can just get on that, those kind of thoughts of what you're grateful for, even if just for a couple of minutes, it will really boost those chemicals in your brain to quiet your brain. Some people call it meditation. Some people call it being in the present moment. You don't have to close your eyes and go om or anything like that, but to just be 100% present where you are. You might be driving your car, and instead of what our mind wants to do is think a lot of thoughts and worry about things. And if you could just, no, let me just pay attention to what my eyes are looking at, the feeling of the steering wheel underneath my fingertips, or there might be radio on, and you just pay 100% attention to what's happening in the present moment. That's just enough to just kind of bring up that brain chemistry a little bit. Exercising, eating right. You know, I mean, I'm overweight. I'm no champion on doing the right thing. But, you know, when you can eat healthy, exercise, drink water, get sunshine, be outside, gosh, that's all so nurturing. Very, very, very nurturing. And you can jump in if you're thinking of things too, Dave. I have a cheat sheet. So.
Well, I'm noticing I have a caller who I happen to know. And I would, if we were grading on best caregivers, this person would be the best caregiver ever born on the earth, because her husband had some issues, and he was eventually confined to a wheelchair. And this woman was taking excellent care of her. Now, she wouldn't agree with me. She was, oh, no, I could have done more, you know. Telling her, Judy, you need to take a little time for yourself. She looked tired most of the time. I saw her trying to lug heavy wheelchairs in and out of cars. I saw her trying to lug her very large husband to places because she knew he would enjoy it. She was always thinking about him and what would he want and what would he do. And she may not want to talk, but I'm gonna try to get her on the line and see if she can give us, because unfortunately her husband died, I don't know, it's been about a year now, and she's like this happy little butterfly that's just flying around. She travels when she wants, and you know, she's been freed from the burden of caregiving, and I'm so happy for her. That I'm sad for her loss, but I'm happy that she can enjoy the rest of her life, you know, like we all planned on enjoying it with our spouse, you know, in good health. And that's why, you know, my wife and I tried to travel as much as we could while we were younger, because we looked around, you know, on cruise ships, there were old people, you know, in wheelchairs, and we says, you know, we want to travel while we're still healthy so that, you know, we don't have to travel in a wheelchair. And you know, we did our share of traveling. And so let's hold on and see if I can get Judy. Judy, are you there? Judy, can you hear me? I'm talking to you, Judy.
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
And we can hear you. And I just gave an introduction, which I'm sure you heard, right?
Oh, my goodness. I didn't know you could hear me.
Yes. Well, now I can hear you. Okay. So listen,
Judy. Hi, Judy. I can hear you, too.
You are you're a caregiver, even though it's a past caregiver. Although that's not true. I've seen you still caregiving for many people. Tell us what it's like being Judy.
Well, I just love your show. I just turned it on today for the time. But I'm going to take it a different direction. I'm telling you, I am a Christian, and I lean on God all the time. I never know where I got the strength to do what I was doing. And I just leaned on the Lord, and he gave me the strength to do it, and I trusted him. And I trusted him through it all, and I never knew if I was going to leave and go to heaven before my husband. So I taught him how to do the things he needed to do if I wasn't there, in the way of transportation and things like that. But I trusted the Lord through it all, and I said, I just trust you. And I just went on, and I enjoyed life. He gave me the gift of taking care of people. And through it all, I can honestly say I enjoyed life. And it was only by the grace of God, because I don't know why I didn't just lay down and die.
It's true. Every caregiver has to rely on a supernatural power, because there just isn't enough power inside of them. But tell us, what do you know about caregiver burnout? Did you ever feel like you were there, that you were burning out, that you were close to burning out, that you actually did burn out? and some of the things that you would do to prevent from burning out?
I am so glad that you asked me that question. Because as I was listening to you speak, I remember, but it wasn't when I was an adult taking care of my husband. It was when I was a young adult and I had three little boys.
Mm.
And I had nobody, no close relative, no relative that really, quote unquote, cared, what even knew what I was going through. And I longed deep down in my heart, I love my three little boys, but I longed deep down in my heart just, I can almost cry when I think of it, I longed to just go to a hotel and sleep one night by myself and just have a time. And I was thinking of all these young mommies out there that are listening. They are the most important caregivers in the world.
Amen. You said it.
And they need their relatives that have a day or two
yes.
available. They need to think of these young mommies with children and hearing baby talk all day long. And little, they need a break, just like caregivers for adults need
yes.
a break. And
yes, and young moms are the most overlooked caregiver. They don't get much recognition. It's like,
absolutely.
Hey, your mother, do your job.
That's right, and they're not thought of as caregivers, but they are. They're so special,
absolutely.
And so important what they do. But I love
so
your
all of
show.
You listening out there, if you know some moms with small children, they are dying to go to a hotel room for one night. Go and tell them you're going to be their babysitter for a night or a weekend. It would mean the world to them, wouldn't it, Judy?
Oh, yes. So important. I mean,
that's
just for
great,
them to walk on the
that's
beach.
That's a great thought.
Just for them to go on the beach and walk on the beach for a day,
mm-hmm.
For an afternoon by themselves, what a joy that would be to a young mom that has little ones all day long.
Mm.
Well, thank you for letting me talk. God bless you. I'm
Judy,
glad you're there.
That was a great thing you said. Thank you so much. You're going to help a lot of people because that's a great, great thing to do. And I just want to say, Judy is continuing to take care of some friends that I know. I think every day she goes see somebody, right? Her calendar is full, I'm sure. So keep doing what you're doing, Judy, but keep taking care of yourself, okay? It's so easy to get burned out and become someone who just can't function anymore, okay?
Oh,
so
God.
Take care of you first, then
every
take
day.
Care of the world. Thanks
Thank
for calling.
You.
Bye-bye.
Bye, Judy.
So any comments on that call?
Oh, Judy's wonderful. She said so many really great things. I mean, really to have faith. And my dad went to church every single day. And even though his days were numbered and things got very painful, he knew Jesus was with him and had... I don't want to call it a game, but it was what gave him joy every day. Every person that walked into his hospital room, he wanted to shine a little light on them and have them leave the hospital room better, feeling loved, and that he had made a difference in their life. And so it would bring him just great joy, and I think Judy does much of this too with all the people she cares for now. It really, I mean, I think on a spiritual level, I don't think there's any bigger gift we can be on this planet than more than making a difference for another person's life.
Oh, absolutely.
But then on a physical level, you know, I know, because I witnessed my dad anytime. Because I was right there with him when a nurse would walk in. Oh, let's get her talking about herself, and let's put a smile on her face, or the doctor, or whatever. I mean, that made us feel good inside. So, mm-hmm. Judy, thank you for that. And I, you know, and even the mother thing. Holy cow! I think, like you said, Dave, it's a given. Oh, you know, this is part of what you signed up for, being a mom.
Yeah.
You know, I had compassion in that moment for my mom who had four little ones, us kids all at the same time. I mean, all within a few years of each other. And you know, yeah, mothers are caregivers. Gosh, if you can, let me take the kids for the afternoon and you go to the beach, walk the beach, get some alone time. What a gift. So to thank you for that, Judy, just to look for, it may not be the traditional caregiver that we're thinking about. In your life, who is somebody who's a caregiver, and how could I make a difference even just for a little while? And, you know, sometimes right. it's just as much as picking up the phone and calling someone and letting them know that you care.
And going to Starbucks for, you know, just so many opportunities to spread happiness, you know.
Oh, sure. And it feels good, and we're not alone, and it... Yeah, and then I do think all that has a ripple effect. You know, we often hear about paying it forward or random acts of kindness and things like that. Those who receive some of those blessings are more apt to give them out themselves. So thank you, Judy, and thanks for just the difference you've made with so many. You're quite an inspiration.
So let me give out that phone number again, 213-943-3630. If you want to talk, just press the number 1. If not, then you'll just be able to listen. Again, Sandra. Oh,
David.
Boy, this topic is so is so important and so all-encompassing. You know, I'm just thinking of other ways of caring for yourself. I'm so thankful that Judy brought that up, because mothers are so overlooked and underappreciated, you know, especially in the days that I was growing up, and I'm sure it was, nobody knew about ADHD, ADDHD,
no.
Nobody knew about autism, nobody knew about all the things that make kids really difficult, you know, and especially boys. I don't know what it is about boys, but, you know, you need a Congressional Medal of Honor if you raised, you know, 2, 3, 4 boys and had no girls, because girls are so much easier most of the time to raise when they're younger. Things get a little hairy when they hit puberty. But boys, on the other hand, are very difficult to raise, I've found from experience, until they hit puberty, and then they become really easy. Now, I'm sure that's not always true, but that's been my observations. But some other, I'm just looking in your book here, Caring for Yourself. You talk about a lot of things, but I think the number one thing is just remember that what you're going through is normal. You know, grief is a normal emotion. And try to participate in rituals, you know, spend time with others, talk about your feelings, journaling or writing, exercising, eating right.
Oh, what a difference.
Join a support. That's very, very important. I don't know how people can get through life as a caregiver or as someone who's disabled without joining a support group. What's your feelings about support groups, Sandra?
Oh, I think they're excellent, and I think, you know, and it might be not a traditional kind of support group. I know a group of ladies that go walking every day, and that's their support. But it happens in our own life. I mean, we can be really well trained in things, and we can plan things a certain way, and then something happens, and sometimes it's loss, sometimes it's grief, somebody's health changes. But the thing is I think each one of us has this knack for, no matter what comes our way, being able to deal with it. And so that's what we're doing right now. And Dave, this is what life looks like when it's working, you know? Wrenches get thrown in radio shows, but yet this is how we make the best of it, and we can still make lemonade out of lemons, remember?
You are so cute.
I'm filled with positive.
About what I was saying, I was reading your book about caring for yourself. Remember that grief
yes.
is a... Okay.
Yes.
What is your take on all of those things that I just mentioned? Oh, a support group. That's what it was. Okay. I was having some memory loss, which, as you know, is a normal function of being a caregiver.
And getting
support
older,
group.
Dave.
I was saying, I can't imagine how somebody who's a caregiver can go through life without being some form connected to a support group. I just can't see it. What is your take on support groups and their importance?
Well, they're phenomenal. Whether it's a support group around being a caregiver, or if you've got a group of friends or a few close confidants. I know for myself, I am my best me when I am with other people, when I'm talking about, when I'm listening to them and making a difference for their life, and sometimes just listening is making that difference. But it's when I'm with people and we're having conversations, or sometimes you just need a shoulder to cry on or just somebody to be with. I find, like, for myself personally, I'm my best me. Yet, I'm also the biggest pain in the neck for myself is me. Mm-hmm. What I feel like when I wake up in the morning is being alone. No one's going to understand. I'm in this by myself. And, you know, it's a tricky thing being a human, because we're often so much harder on ourselves than we would be on another person. And just to know, and it's similar to exercise. It is, in the moment, the last thing you want to do is put on your sneakers and go outside and go for a walk. However, once the sneakers go on and you step outside, it's like natural to walk. Well, same thing when you're dealing with struggles. Everything inside is figuring out how you can just stay alone, and whether you're on the computer or you're, you know, doing some busy work. But sometimes as simple as just picking up the phone and getting into a conversation with another person can snap you back into being you, you know, as opposed to being, you know, really feeling alone. So support is phenomenal.
Yes, I absolutely agree. Well, I think we've covered all of the bases, unless there's something that you think we missed on caregiver burnout.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, speaking from personal experience, you know, I'm just so grateful. You know, this morning I was just sitting in my beautiful yard, and, you know, that's my time of prayer, and I think a spirit of gratefulness and gratitude is absolutely essential when you're a caregiver. You know, people look at me in my life and they say, oh, they don't say it to my face, but I know they're talking about me behind my back. I know they're saying and feeling sorry for me. See, that poor guy, you know, he lost his wife. Things aren't the same. You know, I see him lugging this around and lugging a wheelchair and this and that. Boy, I'm sure grateful that, you know, I'm not him. I'm sure grateful that God didn't do that to us. You know, just weird kind of stuff like that. And how do I know that? Because when my wife was normal, we used to see disabled people, and we used to kind of look at each other and say, you know, why does that family have to lose a child to, leukemia, or why is that one disabled, and this and that, and we just kind of looked at ourselves, and it's like, well, you know, let's enjoy life while we can. But as I look back now, and I just turned 60, so I'm a very wise man with all those years behind me and all the gray hair to give me this crown of glory. And I just am so thankful for everything that happened in my life, even the bad stuff, because, you know, the worst day of our lives theoretically should be the day my wife had a stroke, and it just changed our lives and it turned my life and my world upside down. But you know what? God has given me the grace to have the temperament and the personality and the patience and all the stuff that I need in my toolbox to deal with this. And you know what, Sandra? It's not that hard. I mean, it is hard, but it's not that hard. It's not impossibly hard, if that's a word, impossibly. Mm-hmm. it's easy for me to be Charlene's caregiver. And what's easy for me may be impossible for you. And what's easy for you may be impossible for me. It's like God gives us enough grace to get through whatever it is we have to go through. You know, there's a scripture that says there's a scripture that, and then my mind goes blank. It makes me sound like I don't know. But
that's
it'll
okay.
Come to me. God knows what he's doing. Oh, I know what it is now. He says, I will never give you more than you can handle. Right. And that is so true. And so many times I thought I couldn't handle something. I said, I can't handle this. And you know what? Guess what? I woke up the next morning. I was still alive. And I survived. I survived. Yeah. I should wear that shirt that says, I survived. So the point of what I'm trying to say is just that, you know, be thankful. Be thankful for everything negative in your life, because it's the negative things that have helped define who I am. I mean, if it wasn't for my wife's stroke, I wouldn't be helping all these people. You know, so
we would not have met, Dave.
You know, that's an excellent point. So all you people out there, just be thankful for everything. You know, everything, there's no accidents in this world. Everything happens for a reason. And the struggles that you're going through, you have what it takes, you know, like that thing, you can do it. You have what it takes to make it. And when you do make it, you're going to help other people make it. And that's what Sandra's doing, that's what Judy's doing, and that's what I'm doing, and that's what the world is supposed to do. Now,
yeah,
go ahead.
Judy said something really great, is that it's all a gift. And we can look at something and suffer. I think it should be another way, which is what we're prone to do as human beings. But I love that she used the word gift, because if any one of us look back on our life, we've certainly had good things that have happened, but we've also had some bad things, and we've suffered. But if we look to the person we are now, and we look to the person that is pretty smart and a little bit worldly and has grown from all these experiences, I don't want to be any other person than I am now. And the truth is, Dave, everything that happened in my past has made me who I am right now. You may be struggling and suffering and not understanding what purpose what you're going through now serves, but it is my feeling that there'll become a day that you look back, and perhaps you're making a difference for someone else. Perhaps Judy's now an author doing, you know, making a difference somehow, or she just is filled with love and is sharing, kind of like how Mother Teresa did. She had a phrase that, let no one come around me that doesn't leave happier, or I forgot what the phrase was, but just every person that, you know, that she's able to make some kind of a small difference in their life. But using Judy's word is like the things that happen can be a gift. And if we look, you know, and that could be, you know, they say, another thing we can do is develop a new hobby or a new interest, or look to one of your past interests, what did you have, and get back involved with that. And maybe a hobby can be looking at life through the lens of how is this a gift. One author had once said, you know, fill in the blank, this, what I'm going through is the worst thing that's happened to me because, and then the next sentence is, you know, what's happened to me is the best thing that could have happened to me because. You know, and looking at just you and I and how we've taken our pain and being able to make a difference for another, and we certainly have grown and are in a place that, I don't want to say it's easy, but we have new challenges, you know, like the radio show. No, but it's perfect. And Dave, I really, really appreciate you having me on. And if anybody does want to hear that audio, How to Survive Grief, it's just a, you just press the play button on survivegrief.com, and that's all there is to that.
And it's really free. They just have to pay for shipping or something, right?
Oh, if you want to get the actual CD that you can pop into your CD player, it's a $5 charge. But if you just want to listen to it, you can just, with your computer or your telephone, if you could just go to survivegrief.com, you can just press the arrow, and it'll play through your computer, through your telephone, and you can just listen. So that's
great.
The easiest
That's a great offer. Folks, do you hear that? This is free. Whoever said there was no free lunch, this is free. You go and you click it, you can hear it. And let me just add one more thing that I thought of when you were saying the other thing. One of my favorite movies, because there's a lot of them, is It's a Wonderful Life with Jimmy Stewart.
Oh, yes, yes.
Because
yes,
how many times have we felt like Jimmy when we were on the bridge and we thought that our life didn't matter and we thought that we weren't affecting anybody and that you know, you'd be better off dead than alive because you happen to have a life insurance policy, you know. And, right. And you're just causing misery to everybody, and a guy just punched you in the face, you know, and on and on and on. And thank God in this movie for that angel, Clarence, who reminded him or actually showed him what the world would be like without him, without
yes.
George Bailey. And the whole, and you know, I know it's just a movie, but I tell you, that movie has a lot of truth in it. Because sometimes
sure.
I've felt that way, and I needed to be reminded all of the lives that I have affected, you know. Well, maybe I didn't save my brother's life from falling in the ice so that he couldn't save the life of an entire Air Force carriers, you know, from dying and drowning into the ocean. But, you know, the things that I have done are equally as important to the people who know me. And so I just keep remembering that. And then the other thing I wanted to say is as a caregiver and as a parent too, you know, when my daughter was very, very young, you know, I'm an entrepreneur like you, and so we have a habit of trying to work all the time and trying to do twofers and threefers and fourfers and fivefers, and, you know, sometimes I had to watch my daughter, you know, this is when she was four, five, six, and I'm working also, and she would say, "Dad, you're supposed to be watching me. You're not supposed to be on the phone. You're not supposed to be on your calculator," and this and that. So I would plan things to do that we both enjoy doing, you know, because I'm a kid at heart. And
yeah.
a lot of mistakes that parents make and maybe caregivers make is that only the other person is supposed to have fun. No, pick something that you can both have fun at, because, you know, I'm a kid too. If we both can't have fun, then we're not going to be happy. So I do that
Perfect.
With my wife too. You know, we can't do the same kind of vacations that we used to do, but you know what? Cruise ships are real easy for us because everything's there. We don't have to keep packing, and we don't have to keep loading up the wheelchair. We don't have to, you know, worry about elevators and stairs and this and that. So we bought a van with a little lift on it. You know, it wasn't a new one, but it was a used one that we got a lot cheaper. You know, there's things that you can do to make your life easier and to make sure that you as a caregiver are having fun with. You know, there's outings you can go on, perhaps, or there's things you can bring into the house if your loved one is bedridden or whatever. You know, you just have to be creative. What do you think of that?
I think it's great. My dad and I, in his hospital, I had my laptop, and, you know, I could plug a DVD into it, and the plug where the headsets go, you can actually get a plug that can connect two different headsets. So we would watch Carol Burnett TV shows and some, you know, like the movie Airplane. He was a pilot, so he found that funny, and we'd both have our headphones on watching from my laptop, and, you know, it just... Yeah, you bring the fun. And you said cruise. Put yourself as the cruise director, not a caregiver. cruise director. Give yourself a new title and look for the opportunities for fun. I like that.
You know, it's all about attitude, Sandra. I have this thing hanging in my office, and let me walk over to it so I can read it to you, and I think that would be a good note to end on. I don't know if you know a guy named Charles Swindoll. He was a pastor, and I don't even know if he's still dead or alive. But he said this about attitude, and maybe he stole it from somebody else. It says, "The longer I live, the more I realize the impact of attitude on life. Attitude to me is more important than facts. It's more important than the past, than education, than money, than circumstances, than failures, than successes, than what other people think or say or do. It is more important than appearance, giftedness, or skill. It will make or break a company, a church, a home. The remarkable thing is we have a choice every day regarding the attitude we will embrace for that day. We cannot change our past. We cannot change the fact that people will act in a certain way. We cannot change the inevitable. The only thing we can do is play on the one string we have, and that is our attitude. I am convinced that life is 10% what happens to me and 90% how I react to it." And I just love that.
I love it too. Love
and that's
it,
a great
love it, love
note
it.
To end on. Sandra, thank you so much for coming on. We
You're
appreciate
welcome. It. You're
and
welcome.
God bless you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. God bless you, too. Bye.
When you're down and trouble and you need some love and care and nothing is going right, oh, close your eyes and think of me and soon.